You're listening to the Self-Made Podcast. My name's Mike Coffey, and joining me are my co-hosts, Sam Ramundi and Jeff and Jess Banky. I declare bankruptcy. That's going to be the intro to the show. We had a bunch of topics. I'm going to bring up the notes.
Also, let's just throw a couple of those on there.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Thank you for actually doing some work for us this week so we can look legit for an actual week.
I threw some in the thing. I thought you did too, Jeff. Oh, yeah, you did. You did. Okay.
They're just screenshots.
My notes are Sam's mom.
My mom is great.
So crazy. That's my notes.
She's great. We could just have her on the podcast and just telling embarrassing stories about me. And
oh, she would love that.
She would love it.
Do we want to? Okay, so there's like a bunch of really good questions, actually. Majority of these.
Well,
are really
we're going to make it through like three of them, so might as well just.
If that. A couple I mean.
Wait. Let's preface this. So, backtrack. First off, everyone who's listening, we love you. You're amazing. You've been great. The feedback's been awesome. We've been seeing you tag us in stories, and we love that for us and for you. So thanks. We've been seeing some new reviews come in that are more than one star. So that's been amazing, too. So thank you for that. It's great. And basically what Mike, I'm going to give Mike and Jeff and Jess credit for this because I did nothing this week to do this. But basically, we went to our stories and asked if you guys wanted to hear us talk about certain topics. So here we go. Let's jump on in and talk about some topics that came from our awesome listeners.
Yeah, we got a bunch of really good topics to talk about. I mean, there's a bunch. I mean, some of these are really, really specific to like built out companies and stuff. So I don't know if... I mean, some of these, the one night that I got the most, it seems, is like buying equipment versus, financing equipment versus cash, like buying it outright. Like, what's the pros and cons of that? Which I think is a good question. I don't know if that's a super...
That's a good question.
I mean, I think it's a good one for sure. And then the other one that's very similar to that one that I got a lot was buying equipment as opposed to bringing on labor, like a CNC tooling, automated tooling and stuff. So I think those are good conversations. But let's not jump into those first because those are really... really deep dives. Let's start with one that I think is a very broad question for everyone, which is dealing with difficult clients. That is such a good out of the gate.
Oh, I do. Yeah, I love
so
them.
Well then I think Jess, tell us about dealing with difficult clients.
Oh man,
how do you do it? What do you
especially online because it's a different ball game.
So the anonymity gives them like the strength of 10,000 people. You know, they think they're like the strongest person in the world when they have almost, you don't know who that person is. It's super frustrating. Keyboard warrior types. And like, honestly, I'm trying to think of, I know I've had difficult customers, but I can't even think of an example of a difficult customer because I solve it and then I just try to forget it because I haven't had a client situation that's so bad that it's worth remembering, if that makes any sense. Like I try not to like remember specific events, but like handling it's so tricky most of the time. I mean, you have to, you really don't want to lose like good word of mouth, and you can lose it so fast if you're just like,
yeah,
fuck you, I'm going to come after you, I'm going to kill your family. Like you can't handle it like a jerk. You have to really, really do a lot of,
handle them like with kid gloves.
Yeah. You got kid gloves for sure. You have to be like, yeah, no, you're in your head, you're thinking you're an idiot, but in your words, you're saying you're a valued person and your opinions matter. How can
Thank
we resolve
Thank you so much
this,
for
human?
Reaching out. Yeah. I scream everything I want to out loud and then I type nicely. Hello.
Your
thank
feedback
you so much
is
for
valuable
contacting
to us.
Us. Yes.
We
in
also
a way,
lie.
Though, I was just saying, in a way, though, I would.
We lie. Sorry.
He's like, we lie. In a way, though, I would prefer to work with difficult clients who are online based than in person. I don't know if like you feel that way too, but for me, like I just feel like when it's online, yes, there is like that disconnect in a way because you're not meeting them in person, right? You're just kind of responding online via email or whatever platform you're selling through, when you're in person, like, you got to see that person. And it's like a different level of conflict. And I don't love conflict. So like, it just adds this whole other dynamic that is just, it's not great. And I don't have a great poker face. So like, it's just a problem.
Right. Just Sam, yes, just trembling.
But people are way more mean online than they would be in person, I feel like.
They're yeah, that is true. More... I do agree with that.
Another.
Yeah. Why do you lie, Jeff?
We lie in that, like, I would say our average item we sold was between like $300 and $1,000. So Mike's local, so you're actually dealing with local people, and you're, what your average price is $5,000 to $20,000. So there's just more grace in that item taking longer and like understanding versus people just getting online. They just assume we're just some big factory versus some little small company.
Right. Yeah, the Etsy culture is so frustrating. All I've done is talk bad about Etsy on here, but there's value in Etsy for sure. But like last night, I got a message on Etsy. A lady bought a digital file, and she said, "I've ordered this item twice. Why have I not received it? Why are you not sending my item?" I said, "Ma'am, I don't send you the item. Etsy does, and it's delivered to your previous purchases. It's a digital download." You know, it's just, she's like, she was indignant with me, and she had no understanding of the system that she was using and how to purchase on there. It's just wild to me that people get such attitudes about things. And it was like a $3 or $4 like digital download, you know, and it's just like, it sucks that I had to take any time out of my day to address an item that I'm going to make $3 on, because it's just not even worth it at that point. Like dealing with having any interaction with a customer about a $3 purchase. And I know it sounds petty, but like, I don't have time for that. Like, I don't want to spend any time with a client when there's a $3 involved. Like, it just doesn't even make sense. So that's the downside of them. But the upside is when you sell like 20 of them a day or whatever, and you don't have to deal with anyone, it's super nice. So I don't know. There's these upsides and downsides. But
a few times a year, we get that customer that buys like, oh, just recently, like a couple weeks ago, they bought a dice roller, but we don't sell dice rollers. They bought a digital download for $8. And they were like, just mad that they never received their dice roller. Like, it's a solid wood dice roller. Like, shipping would have been $8. What bucks. Do you
yeah,
like, the fact that no one reads anything is insane to me.
Yeah, I mean, you have it in the description. It says this is it's in the digital download section.
It's in the picture.
It says it's a digital download in the description. It's in the picture. I even now put in the description, this digital download will be delivered to your previous purchases in your profile on Etsy. Like, I have all this verbiage in there. They just don't read anything. And it's, anyway, people are so dumb.
I even tell people lying how to unzip the file.
Right, yeah. I don't know how to unzip
or extract. You never said what we lie about, Jeff. What are we lying about?
No, we like our price range lies between like $200 and $1,000. Oh. It'd be straight lie to
way
customers.
Less juicy.
I was like, what am I missing?
We were waiting for the drama. We were like, we want the drama.
Yeah.
I thought maybe we were going to say like the ship time or something, but no, that's... We try.
The only time people really get mad is if we're behind on shipping, or it arrives broken, or UPS loses it. But like, it's all stuff that we have no control over. Like, I did my part. I made it on time. I shipped it.
Right. Yeah. And they get mad at you and you're like, you know, I don't actually control that. You have to explain that very obvious fact to bozos. It's like, yeah, I actually don't own UPS. I'm actually just stuff. Like,
I'm actually not driving
like
this to you.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Believe it or not, we are not hand delivering this because all of our margins would be gone. Yeah, it's really frustrating. I have had situations where, like, talking about the higher value or higher ticket items where there is a bit more grace and understanding that these things take like weeks to make, not like a couple of days. We do those things. We make home good stuff, but I've started to like price myself out of those things purposely because it's really hard for my business to make any sort of margins on an item under certain dollar amounts. There's only a handful of items we actually still make that they're almost entirely automated on the CNC, like home good items. So I've priced a lot of this stuff up. I actually was on my website last night and I was like, ooh, I got to really price some of these up because we just can't make them. I'll lose my ass on the dollar
amount. Making pallets of them.
Right. Well, we're not tooled out for these things anymore. Like, I don't like when we make things, we have to make a bunch of them or a big thing. Like, that's just how we're tooled out. So it's just different. And there's nothing. It's just a different way of approaching it. But when we do have these big jobs, sometimes there'll be pushback on things from either like the owner or the general contractor or a designer or something like that. And we'll do these jobs and we'll already have like a contract in place. So that is a client being difficult for sure. Like they'll be like, hey, we need to move this delivery date up. And I'm like, our contract doesn't stipulate that. Our contract says this. And they'll be like, we need this. And I'm like, I don't care. Like our contract says this. And then we'll get back and forth. Yeah, we'll go back and forth on an email, you know, and then eventually get to the point where they're starting to threaten me with like legal talk. So I'll just copy my lawyer and then he'll say something. And then the conversation's done because I don't have to worry about it anymore because they see that my lawyer's on the email.
That's
and then
it just a flex. Goes away.
It
just
is.
Just like you can talk to my lawyer.
Well, I'm like,
what
I've
do you
copied
do if
my
you
lawyer.
You don't have a lawyer.
Well, you need to get a lawyer.
Yeah.
Copy your lawyer.
Well, if it's stuff. Yeah. Like, yeah, you can actually just make up a fake one. I mean, you could. You could just buy like a fake
CC domain. CCMikesLawyer@gmail.com.
Yeah. Maybe don't do an @gmail one. Maybe make up a fake website. lawyerforhired@gmail.com. No. Mike's lawyer at gmail. You can talk to my lawyer. And it's very easy to remember his email because it's Mike'sLawyer@gmail.com. So good.
I've seen worse.
This isn't the worst fake lawyer email I've seen today. No, I'll be like, well, you know, some of these, I'll say something along the lines of like, blah, blah, blah. This is hard to interpret, but my lawyer can probably interpret it better. And I just copy him. And then typically he'll respond with one thing and it's done. So it won't be an issue anymore. So, and I don't want to do that with clients. So
can we get a lawyer on the podcast?
Oh, for sure we could.
I would love to.
I would love that.
People steal our files all the time. And I would love to just have a lawyer just send them an email. Be like, hey, here's a cease and desist. This is Two Moose's property. But what's that going to cost me? Because is it worth my time chasing down these idiots?
Probably not on that stuff.
That's what I'm saying.
Maybe, though. Maybe there's someone who... Maybe there is a lawyer that can help you with that. And it might be worth like you not doing. I mean,
I don't know how much lost revenue...
Like, I don't know how much loss.
Like, how do you calculate that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just so hard to tell. But, I mean, we should totally get a lawyer on the show. That'd be super interesting. I'm trying to think, like, what specific discipline of lawyer we should bring on. Because, I mean, my lawyer is a construction lawyer. It's, like, the closest thing I could find. It was my old family business's lawyer. That's, like, the closest thing I could find to what applies to what I do. And he does a great job. Like, by and large, it's a lot of similar jargon to whatever I have to deal with, you know? So, I mean, basically the contract I use is a contract for commercial construction, but we like change some of the boilerplate talk out and it works great. So
I think like a copyright lawyer, someone like that, because in our realm, because people steal my files, copyright kind of stuff, or copying other people's items or just stealing our content, because the content's just a wild, wild west. Like every day there's someone that's just like stealing our shit and trying to post it elsewhere to make money on it.
I wonder how.
But also,
what do you?
People tag me in it, or
no kidding? Oh man, that'd be nice.
YouTube shows you on YouTube. There's like a whole section that's like so and so used 80% of your video, and I recently lost Usually, I make a dispute, they remove it, everything's cool. Then they send me a message saying they're sorry, and I don't care, and I still report them. And then recently,
sorry for stealing.
And then
JeffsLawyer@gmail.com.
I should. So YouTube pretty much made me, they said, show me the patent on my, like, that's not how it works. So essentially YouTube said I had to get a lawyer to fight this person. And if I don't send them a lawyer letter, it's pretty much they win. So they essentially know I'm not going to get a lawyer. So I essentially just got screwed at it and they got to keep
the
video.
That's so annoying.
That's such garbage, man. That sucks.
I was pretty frustrated.
Yeah.
Well, that's why too. Like, I'm in like a bunch of Facebook groups. This is like one of those things Facebook is really helpful for, where it's like other bloggers or content creators, and they all kind of like look out for one another, and they'll be like, "Hey, this Etsy store is stealing like a whole bunch of your guys's like plans. Check it out and make sure yours aren't on there." And then they'll just like tag us. And then we all get to like look and see if people are stealing our plans or our projects or whatever. So it's also like that's where like the community aspect comes in. That's kind of cool, too, is like if you can join groups like that, they always look out for you.
That's super cool. That'd be really helpful for sure. Yeah, and like
Facebook's bad. There's so many accounts I see on there that are just fake, or people steal people's content from TikTok and post it on Facebook, and it's a completely just bogus account.
I love when people start tagging you in it, though, and it's like, did you think that you were... Or it's like, I'm Sam from DIY Huntress, and then the picture is like a bearded man, and then it's like, did you not think anyone was going to notice that you do not look like Sam from DIY Huntress? Like, what?
Hairy arm Sam. You
never know.
Hairy arm Sam, baby. Let's go.
Gross. Yeah, I think honestly, like, I think lawyers aren't nearly as pricey as people think they are. It's like a rate that is, well, I mean, it's tough when it's like a $200 thing or a $400 thing and your margin's like 40 or 50 bucks. And then you're like, I'm going to pay this person 200 bucks to send an email or 100 bucks to send an email or whatever. Yeah, that's hard to swallow. So, however, if you have the lawyer make up a document that kind of covers a lot of these things, and you can pay them like for an hour and to get a conversation with them, and they'll tell you, you know, hey, we can come up with this for this solution moving forward, and you pay 200 bucks one time and you have this document that exists from them.
That's a good idea.
I mean, it's worth like reaching out to a lawyer when you're a business owner to see what ways they can help you. Cause they obviously want to get paid, but when I needed my contract language altered, I emailed my lawyer. He did not charge me for the email for that. But if he was going to be involved in actually writing the contract, he would have. But he ended up having one of his paralegals do it. And that's a way lower rate because it's such standard legalese stuff that the gal I work with, I won't say her name, but the gal I work with the most, I don't actually work directly with my lawyer I really don't want to be in a situation where I actually need to use him. I'll copy him on an email, but typically he's not even responding to the emails. It's one of his paralegals. It's just from his office, and his office covers all of his activities. So it's kind of this weird, like, it's like a hierarchy. You can pay for the lawyer, which you really only need for very specific things. And then there's paralegals. And then there's like staff below that who can process a lot of the other stuff for even cheaper. So like there's administrative staff, like they file all my S corporation stuff. They do all of my state stuff, all that stuff. And it's like, each activity is like $100. So $100 is not very expensive. I charge more than that per hour. So if I spent an hour setting, like redoing my state corporation stuff, I'm losing money not having them do it because it's cheaper than me doing it because I charge more than that per hour. So those are things to like really consider, like really, really, like a lawyer is a really nice thing to be able to, if you're in a really shitty argument with someone and you can copy a lawyer, a lot of those problems go away really fast. So it's worth like finding someone, like ask around to like who, ask people in your area, like who have, do you know any lawyers? And then see if there's a name that keeps popping up that people recommend. And that's a good way
What's
to go
that?
About it. So
there's a website that does stuff like that. Cause that's,
Legal
I never
Zoom.
Even really,
I
Legal
have
Zoom.
It.
Cause
yeah,
all
I
need,
mm-hmm.
I need a document that I can shoot out to people and essentially use as a flex. And then that probably enough will work. And if the cease and desist kind of thing don't work, then you'd actually have to get a real lawyer and that would be pricey. But if I could just get like a letter for like $200-$300,
I don't even think you pay that much. Honestly, if you go on LegalZoom and you pay, it's like, I pay $25 a month for LegalZoom, I think is what it is. Maybe it's, I mean, it's $25 a month. It's just another subscription, but you can go on there and like search for a lot of documents in their archives. And there's a lot of really good stuff. Like, I got an employee handbook off there. I modified it. Like they had an employee handbook like written up. I just modified it for what my needs were, but it was had all the legal headings. You put in your state, you put in your, obviously the country, but it has all this, it has a large portfolio of all these things you can download. I mean, what you're looking for likely already exists on their archives. And, you know, you can pay for it for 1 month and then cancel and download whatever you need. However, they don't support you after you stop paying for it. So if you have a document that like has old verbiage that's been changed by new local laws or state laws, they won't support that. But if you keep paying for it, which is what I do, I've had it for like 7 years, your documents can be updated easily. Like you can search that document again and it'll show you the most updated version of that contract with local laws. So anyway.
But also, I think... a lot of people sleep on the contract of making furniture. Because if we make a table, we go over everything, we put everything in that contract, and that the customer signs off and agrees on the color of that table or whatever. So when I get there, they're not like, I want that two shades darker. I'm like, no, based on our contract, we agreed and all that. Even with content, though, every decent brand deal we do has some sort of contract that covers both parties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, contracts are really important. And I have a dollar amount threshold set up for within my project management. Well, I have to manually do it. But under a certain dollar amount, I don't want to scare the client. Like, especially with residential clients, like they start to freak out. Like when they see a contract, they're like, we don't need to get a lawyer involved. I'm like, we're not. It's just an agreement for both of us to cover both of us. But that doesn't get interpreted that way oftentimes with people. They see a contract and they get scared. Which is a very normal response, I think. I think I see a contract for a normal... If I was buying a piece of furniture from Target and they handed me a contract, I'd be like, whoa. And obviously, we all know it's different than you're having someone make one for you. But it's still kind of intimidating when you have a contract handed to you for something that you just kind of see as a normal purchase. Even if you are spending more on it and it's a nicer crafted purchase, contracts make people really uncomfortable. So you really got to figure out like where that is. Like, however, in the commercial world, they're so normal. If I do a job with a client and I would do a job with a commercial client and I wouldn't have a contract, they'd be like, where's the contract? You know, so they draft one up and then it's in their verbiage. I'd much rather bring a contract to the table in my verbiage and then we all agree to it. It just makes things easier. So, they might have weird verbiage in there that like relates to completely different trades. And I don't want to be involved in a contract that has nothing to do with me. It covers us equally, but there's a bunch of verbiage in there that does not apply to my trade and what I'm doing. So if I have a contract specific to what I'm doing, it makes me look more professional and it covers exactly what I'm doing. And that's way nicer. So I don't know how we got into this, but anyway, that's important stuff to think about. Let's see. Ooh, this one's brutal. Finding customers. Finding customers is do finding customers. I think that's I think we've kind of discussed that on the show before. I think, well, let's talk. Let's Jeff and Jess, you guys go first, because talk about how you guys like took off your, I think we discussed this a few episodes back. So, but I think it's worth having a conversation dedicated to just this, because all of us have different answers. I know that.
So finding customers. So to us, so we could have probably found customers semi-local, because the major cities are probably an hour or so away if you go both directions. But we had so much work on Etsy, which I'll get on how we get those customers in a second. But it's just, there's people around that have money. Like people, there's lake houses that people there that have just insane amount of money, like Lake Tahoe. I'm sure there's most of them houses on there are probably $1 million plus houses, so they can afford a $5,000 table. But for us, we just got so ingrained in Etsy and had so much work, I just never had like the energy or brain power to kind of go out past that. And to get online sales, you have to have eyeballs, and you can get that initial traffic through social media, word of mouth. But online, word of mouth's a little bit different. But if someone gets an item and loves it, they're gonna tell their friend or sister or whatever. But ads, I mean, you got to run ads or be plugging away in social media. But also, if you have no sort of following or interesting kind of social, it's not going to do a whole lot for you. For like us right away, Pinterest was huge, and then we slowly started growing Instagram and all that stuff, but Pinterest was our main source of traffic until we started like switching gears into other items, because only certain items were really hitting on Pinterest at certain times. So then we started funneling money into ads. And what did we spend on ads? At like $5-$10 a day, that's not even crazy. That's like some of these tech companies will be spending more than they're making just on ads to get their name out there. So it's just something you got to waste. But the average business probably averages 40% if you're lucky on income. So you kind of need to right away, maybe if you're growing and you have a job currently, spend that money in advertisement or some sort of way to get your name out there instead of just pocketing it. Because if ideally you have some sort of income to get you by, and most people are doing this as like a side business until they can make enough money. So reinvest that money you make into finding customers or making your setup a little bit better.
That's really smart. I do no ads. I need to do it. I need to get, I actually need to bring someone or find someone who can handle that stuff for me, because I don't know what to do. But like, I've talked, I mean, ad spend and like ROI and like cost per customer or whatever it's called, like your, or cost per sale. I don't know what that is, but that's stuff that I just don't do. And I really need to do, like, getting,
so Etsy spits out that metric for you. So if we spend $5 a day,
I spend money on Etsy. I spend like $4 a day on Etsy. It's honestly, I need to turn it off. It's not even paying for itself at all. I'm so bad on Etsy. I mean, like, that is great. Like, to get your Etsy store going, like, that's, there's almost, it's, it makes no sense to not run ads. You can almost immediately see within a month the turnaround when you run ads on Etsy. I'm purposely like divesting myself out of Etsy. So it's like,
yeah,
I'm
I wouldn't,
just making things more expensive.
If I was you, I wouldn't even bother.
Yeah, it just doesn't. Digital downloads I will have over there. That's it. I'm trying to pull all the physical products out of there entirely. But if you are doing physical products, 100%, like, there's, you just got to run ads on Etsy. It pays off for sure. Like, if you spend like $100 a month on there, you're going to get way more than that back. I mean, you're just going to, like, it just works. They know what they're doing. Like, that's how they're running their business. Etsy is basically set up their business model so that it just makes sense for you to pay them to run ads. So absolutely do that. I need to figure out, like, Facebook ads for the business and
pay someone.
Those are supposed to be huge. Yeah. And Google ads, like, those are supposed to be huge. And I've done none of them. And I need to, like, I'm sleeping on it and it's a real issue.
So we used to regulate, like, our, how busy we were based on how much money we were spending on ads. So if we were have too much stuff going on, we would get rid of the ads or only drop it down to like a couple dollars instead of like $6, $8, $10. And Google AdWord and Facebook is super powerful, but you really need to know how to target that audience or you're literally setting money on fire. So unless you want to spend 4 weeks learning how to do that, or, you know, could be even longer, I would just, you know, find someone. They're going to know your niche after running so many ads to kind of narrow down who your audience is. And I'd pay someone. Otherwise, you're just kind of burning money unless you really want to buckle down and learn how to do all that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Sam, you got any you got any thoughts? You got any thoughts on landing clients?
So I did a lot of commission work when I was first starting. Obviously, right now I'm more doing brand deals, but it was a lot of word of mouth locally for a while. But I will say social media played a huge, huge role in getting me some other opportunities. And even still, like, you know, I definitely have people who reach out local, kind of asking for commissioned work or custom stuff in their houses. And I definitely do believe in like the value of creating like that community online, because you're always going to have people who are seeing your work and want it. So I think that that's like where the bulk of like what comes in that I'm not doing sponsorship wise comes in. I know we talked about Etsy, I think like an episode or two ago, but like I didn't have a great experience with them. And a lot of that was because I think it was just too unpredictable for me. And then, you know, you would send some stuff out and then people would, you know, leave not great reviews if they weren't completely stoked. But like everything you're making, like I was making things that are reclaimed wood. Like I can't guarantee certain things, you know, and I don't know. I'm glad I moved over to the social media thing more, but I do agree in terms of like the ad thing. Like if you are someone who is selling product, like the ad marketing is really important because you're going to be able to reach so many more eyeballs. So like what Jeff and Jess are saying is just, it's great. Like invest in that portion of your business because that's just going to find the people who actually want to buy from you.
So Google ads and Facebook ads really work. That's why people pay for them. And I haven't used it. So I just got to find someone who can actually do that stuff. I got a guy locally to me who is a client who is an expert in SEO. He worked for, probably shouldn't say the company, but he worked for a tech company and they just had some restructuring. He got laid off and now he's available for that. So he's actually trying to start a company to do SEO. I just feel like he's going to be super expensive, but I mean, he'll probably be able to do the job really well. So anyway. I think it's good stuff to do. I just
definitely worth it, so I don't have any throwing some money at. But also, you have enough work going on. But it'd be nice to have that in your back pocket.
I do, but like I'm really trying to really target affluent clients. If we're going to keep doing a lot of this stuff, like I really want to target where my leads are coming from, because I'm very tired of. Sometimes people are really good about making it sound like they can afford expensive furniture. I can usually suss it out pretty quick, but sometimes I'll get like really far into the pricing process and They're like, oh, what? I'm like, oh, what do you think this is going to cost? Oh, okay. You know, that, and I literally have people who'd be like, oh, we were just kind of looking for someone who's kind of getting going because they just want to pay less. They want to pay less for what they perceive to be the same work. So yeah, fine. They're trying to get more bang for their buck, but it's not what we do here. So anyways, I thought that's a good talking point for sure. There was another one in here that I saw and I can't find it now. Oh, I mean, we've talked about how to price work a million times, but so let's not go into that. But that's like a whole episode. Like we should probably, I think we maybe already did a whole episode on that. But understanding the cost of your business and how to develop your rate,
yeah, like this,
which is similar to how to price your work. But I think this is a better version of that question. And like always being on top of your money and your numbers is so important. And I think I see a lot of people, and I'll talk specifically about furniture makers. A lot of furniture makers are very bad at business. They struggle because they don't stay on top of their money and they don't know how much money they got in the bank. I mean, they probably have a rough idea, but they don't have like a really good idea about how much money they have in their bank and what costs are coming down the pipeline. And one of the other questions we got was like cash flow management, which is kind of lumps into the same question. I mean, I have a lot of clients where we have 30-day terms and I have a handful of clients where we have 60-day terms. And I basically, Coffee Custom Builds becomes a bank for these projects. Like we're bankrolling this project. I have to pay for all the material. I have to pay for my employees to do all their work. And then we deliver it. And then typically we have 30 days on these terms. And like I said, sometimes 60 days. When you're floating a job for 60 days after you've already finished the job and some of this stuff takes a month to build, you're talking like 90 days before you're getting paid for work. It's really stressful. And like it's tough on like your brain. Like I mean, very candidly, I have not barely paid myself this year because I was stressed at the beginning of the year because we had a job that was, I was going to be getting a big deposit on that I cleared out the majority of the end of January and February on. And that whole job got pushed to the summer. And we had this big open spot in the schedule and I wasn't getting that deposit, which was a lot of money. And, you know, the company pays me a wage. I can fortunately not pay myself and be okay for a while, but I can't not pay my employees. They're payrolled employees like me, but I can reduce my payments and I don't get mad at myself. I get frustrated with the situation, but I have to pay my employees. They have to be paid. So that money, that cash flow has to be figured out. So it's really stressful, but you really need to figure out, you really need to keep certain amounts of money in the bank. I have a like bottom threshold, like if the bank account dips below that amount, I really start freaking out. It's basically like 6 months of operating costs in the bank account. Anytime that dips below that, I'm like, I'm like, we got to land some, it's stressful. Like I got to get some deposits in. I got to start getting some more stuff on there. I got to get some quick hitter jobs. I got to find something so that I can keep build up that cushion. It's got to be there. It's just so scary without it, especially when you're floating so much work.
I think the two main reasons businesses fail is one, people just get overwhelmed. They can't handle all the stress and the million things going on because they're not delegating properly, and money.
Yeah.
So many people are bad with money and they just don't really teach you any of that kind of stuff in school. So if you're the kind of person that's just maxing out credit cards and doing all this crazy stuff and buying trucks you can't afford, business just might have to be put on the back burner until you can get them. If you can't get your normal life finances in order, business finances are just going to crush you, because if you're running on fumes all the time, I mean, a lot of us do, but it's just so much more stress. And it's like Mike said, you got to have. So what we did, we were both thinking about quitting our jobs. We were doing well. The first thing we did was paid off all of our debt. And then after that, we started just stacking all the money we could, because I was still working and at that time she wasn't. So we were saving all that money to have somewhat of a cushion. We ended up blowing most of it because we built a shop and paid for it outright because I didn't want that overhead, because I wanted to have that low cost of low cost of running the business and like cost of living. But you got to have that money. And if you have that money built up, put it in a high interest savings account, because what do you get, like 4%, Jess? What's that?
Wealthfront.
But if you got, you know, $20,000-$30,000 sitting in an account, you're doing pretty good on Wealthfront, just on 5% of that money sitting there, and you don't Hopefully you don't need it, but again, you got to keep track of that threshold.
Transparently speaking, like that was the hardest thing for me when I went from full-time, I mean, when I went from side hustle to full-time, because when I was in a side hustle, right, like I had a steady income still coming in while I was running my business. And to know that like I had extra money that I didn't have to worry about a paycheck was amazing. And then the first year I did have this moment of panic where I was like, oh my God, like that steady paycheck is gone. And like, if I'm done with a project for a sponsor and it's a net 60, like I'm not seeing that come in for 60 days. And so that was something that was really hard for me. It was kind of figuring out how to budget. And yes, don't get me wrong, like I saved, you know, like basically a year's worth just in case something went wrong. But, you know, like in terms of the debt thing, right, like I still have student loan debt. I'm going to be paying that for a long time to come. And that's not like I'm on an aggressive payment plan to try to pay that down. But like paying off my debts wasn't really an option for me in that regard, like when I left my full-time job. But yeah, it was hard. It was hard to sit down and try to figure it out. And I had those moments of panic sometimes where I was like, oh my God, am I going to be able to afford the bills? And luckily, I was able to hustle and find some other things to do to pay those things. And I felt comfortable. But that has been my goal this year and my second year doing this full time is to pay more attention to the finances, because that gets so stressful if you do not know where your next paycheck is coming from.
Yeah. And then there's something like the student loan thing. You just kind of factor that into like your overhead, I guess. It just becomes like a cost of living thing. You just factor in. I mean, there's something you just can't pay off, like $300,000,
$200,000. Yeah, like some, so. Mortgages. Yeah. And
I still have student loan. Nothing like Sam does. And we still have our mortgage. But other things, you know, we paid off.
Well, something to think about, too, what Jeff was saying is about like when you're running a business, like the costs are way more, like there's just way more money involved. Like if you work at a day job, which is great, not talking down to that at all. If you work at a day job and let's say your combined household income is like, I don't know, between 100,000 and 200,000, right? If your business is making between 100,000 and 200,000, if you left that kind of job and you were living fine, you're not doing enough money. If you're working for yourself, the revenues are so much higher for you to make the wage you used to make. You have to do like, you know, 500,000 to make $100,000 a year, best case scenario in most of these type of jobs, you know, making products or content. Like there's overhead involved. So if you have all this overhead, just by nature of it, you're going to be having to deal with more money. And if you're bad with money, when you add more money to the mix, you're not going to get better at it.
It's not getting any
running
better.
Money. Like it doesn't, it gets harder. Like you have so much more to juggle. Like when you have, I mean, literally everything's a bill. Like there's so many bills. Like, I mean, every day I have to order stuff for the company every day. Mm-hmm. There's so much money going out every single day, like multiple Amazon purchases a day sometimes. Lumber purchases,
thousands of dollars in lumber.
Yeah, thousands and thousands of dollars. Like, I mean, I spend typically my material spend per month is between $15,000 and $40,000 a month in material spend. It's insane. Like, it's like, bleh. I mean, the upside is if you get good with your money, is you can put it on a credit card, pay that off, and you get points, which is nice because you can travel. But if you're bad with it, you're going to go bankrupt. Like, when you're bad with credit cards, you're just bad with credit cards. So, you just can't, it's not free money. It's just not. It's not only not free money, it's very expensive money, and it will literally put your life in ruin if you don't manage it well. So, and then factoring all of that in, like all of these costs and everything it costs for you to not just cover those costs, but then also make some money, you need to figure out what your shop rate is and or your daily rate or whatever your rate is for when you're charging stuff so you can quickly price up work. And everyone has a different answer to that because everyone has a different operation. So when people ask me what my rate is for whatever I do or what Sam's rate is or Jeff and Jess, what your rate is, I instantly know that person has a poor grasp of how this all works because their operating costs cannot be the same as my operating costs because we just don't do the same thing. You can throw a random number out there and it'll probably cover their stuff, but you don't want to just put a random number on your shop rate or your day rate or whatever it is because you could be charging way too much and pricing yourself out of the market and trying to get more money than you need. Or you can be pricing yourself way too low and then you're screwed and you're out of business in a year. So you really need to be able to analyze what your actual costs are and determine what your rate needs to be and then kind of factor in boo-boos and stuff like that. But like none of us are going to say what our rates are because it doesn't, one, it's no one's business. But two, like it doesn't actually.
It's so individualistic.
It's not applicable to everyone. Yeah, it's not applicable to everyone. So it doesn't matter. Like the rate you have to figure out your own rate. And it's so important to do that.
And to figure that out, what I would recommend doing is just sit down. If hopefully you've been in business for 6 months, take that 6 months, go through all your debts and figure out exactly how much you're spending each month. Find an average, say your average spend is $10,000 on materials, labor, whatever, for just an easy number. And then you also have to factor in your time, because you don't want to just be breaking even on your debts and then you're essentially just working for free.
Yeah. You're just shooting yourself in the foot. Like you can't make $1 an hour. Like you're just going to burn. That's where people burn out. Like if you don't make enough money, and it's really easy to be like, you need to charge your rate. It is hard to charge your rate. Like it's not easy. Like you can't, people will be very resistant to paying the amount of money you're worth. And it's really hard to find the clients or whatever they are, your customers or whatever. It's really hard to find the clients and people that will pay that rate. It's hard. It's not easy. And that's where the real work comes in. And that goes back to the other conversation of finding clients. And do you do that with ad spend? Do you do that with social media marketing? There's so many ways to get clients in, but what's going to be the best way to get the kind of client you need? Honestly, for me, I keep saying I want to find more affluent clients, and that usually is best through word of mouth. So I don't know if ad spend is going to actually work, but I'm very interested in trying to find out if that works. So all this stuff kind of like plays on itself.
You've also worked with like interior designers and stuff like too, like real estate. What are the people that sell houses called?
Realtors.
Realtors. I mean, like they may not bring you a ton of work, but it's also a good idea to at least put your name out there if you're new, knowing that people are buying new houses and might want a table or a cutting board gift or anything like that.
I think the biggest value is just networking with everyone. Like everyone. Well, I mean, you don't need to network with like the manager at a Burger King. I mean, not that that person can't bring some work, but I mean, you need to think about who you're networking with. I mean, a realtor, that's exactly right. They're dealing with people with new homes. People want to furnish their new homes. They may not right away because they just dropped a bunch of coin on a house, but at some point things will stabilize out for them and they'll be like, you know, I remember hearing about this person. They can make me what I need and make my dream come true for this piece. So, but that goes the same thing with like an electrician. I mean, an electrician is the last person in a house a lot of times, or just whoever, anyone in the trade who's in homes. Sometimes a homeowner will be like, hey, we're looking for someone to do this in our house. Do you know someone who can do this? They'll ask the person that they kind of trust who just came in, and they'll, by word of mouth, recommend someone. So,
but that's the key though, because people are, I don't want to say lazy, but I'm 10 times more likely to go purchase or hire an electrician through a recommendation. Like if my friend used that person and they're like, oh, use this guy, I'm like, I'm 100% going to call that guy versus calling five other people that I have no idea who they are.
Yeah, that's human nature. I mean, that's how we're all wired that way. I think we gain trust from someone and we trust their opinion. Sometimes it doesn't work out, but a lot of times it does work out. So when there's a person, you have a person that you can trust. So it's really nice. Man, there's so many good ones in here. I feel like these ones about buying equipment versus hiring employees is very specific to like me. So we won't go into that.
I would. Yeah, that's something you can go on. That's not like something we can do in 20 minutes, probably.
Yeah, that's a long one. And it's just real specific to specific stuff. Balancing time. I think we've kind of discussed that. Okay. You know what? This is a great one. And I don't know that we've talked about it. This came into the podcast. Actually, this may have been into Jeff's, but it was, if you're shy, which I don't know that any of us are actually shy, but if you're shy, how do you get out of your comfort zone and start creating content? And I'm going to throw it to Sam. How did you start creating content?
Well, I'm the first to admit that I'm not shy. In fact, I'm the first to admit that I probably am too open and put my foot in my mouth on a regular basis. But that's fine. You all love me anyway.
It's true.
But what I will say is I can probably say with confidence, like I'm sure you can all chime in on this, but when you are doing something that you love, you are a very different person in the sense of you are you and you feel like that is your true self and you are happy and you enjoy it and you're passionate about it, right? And like for me, I am a very different human being in my shop versus like in front of a computer, right? Or like even in a huge social situation. So just record yourself doing that thing that makes you happy and just put it out there, because even if you are shy, you might be inspiring somebody else out there who's also shy and not sure where to start, who's just watching your content, enjoying what you're doing, seeing you in your happy place, seeing you do your thing. And then they're like, oh, I can do that too and share what I love to do also. And also too, like, you don't have to have a huge personality or be an extreme extrovert to share what you love and what you're doing. I mean, look at like ASMR stuff, right? Like people just making shop sounds. Like that doesn't necessarily include them being them in the content, but like they're putting out this really soothing stuff that other people are loving. So just kind of figure out like what you gravitate towards and what you want to share, because either way, like you're going to do something and share something that's going to inspire other people. Like the right people are going to find you if you're just putting out stuff that's authentically you.
There's actually a lot of YouTube channels that I've watched that don't talk at all, or they just do a voiceover and it's essentially just recording them making a table or whatever, because it's a lot easier to do a voiceover than it is to like talk on camera. Also, it's like being shy. Like I wouldn't say I'm shy, but I'd say I'm more introverted. And like the first like 6 months or so, I didn't even show my face on Instagram. It's just like my hand pointing and talking about things. But it also feels different talking to your camera in your safe space, which is your shop or your garage or your house, than talking in front of a bunch of people. So I would just be yourself and just post a couple stories, or, you know, start out with stories, because stories disappear in 24 mm-hmm. hours. So start out mm-hmm. there, build your confidence, and no one cares. I mean, you're going to get some people that are going to say dumb stuff, but you could be the coolest person in the world with the coolest dogs and cats on your Instagram, and people are still going to talk trash on you. But also, I didn't get much, not really hate, but much pushback until you start getting like big numbers. When your posts start going viral, that's when all the rude people come in, and odds are then people aren't even following you anyway, and they're just dickheads. But I'd say 99% of like the comments I get in my stories or comments on my posts are generally positive. You can't let the few rude people get to you. Just be yourself.
Yeah. I think the other thing too to think of is like, you're going to get more comfortable with it as time goes on. Like I love sometimes, I purposefully will not delete my first video on YouTube because I like going back and watching it and like seeing how awkward I was on camera to remind myself of how far I've come. And I'm still evolving. Like my style of shooting video in my shop probably changes on like a 6 month basis, because after 6 months, I'm like, okay, I'm comfortable trying this thing. And, you know, I try something new. So yeah, like you don't just get there overnight. And I think most people would be very surprised to meet other people at like events like Workbench Conference or Maker Camp or wherever you go. Like we're all kind of, I mean, most of us are kind of shy and introverted. And I think that's why we all get along so well in a sense, because like we're all doing this like this thing in solitude that we really like in our shops by ourselves, talking to our phones. Like there's not a lot of human interaction for a lot of us in our shops all day. And then you like meet everybody and you're like, oh my God, they're just like me, right? So I think a lot of people would be really surprised to meet some of the people they see doing their thing online and be like, oh, that person actually is pretty shy in person, but like they're different on camera behind a phone or behind, you know, a YouTube screen or whatever.
We're all just normal, weird people.
We're all a bunch of weirdos. It's fine. And we all love it. We love it. We're all a bunch of weirdos.
Anyone that's authentic, I would say, it's like, I would say my personality gets turned up like 25% just because you want to be more bubbly and energetic and just happy on camera. But like you meet someone like Jason and you see this guy eating wood glue on YouTube, but like that's Jason. Jason's just a weird, funny, happy guy. And it's just, yep. I'd say 98% of the people you meet at like Workbench Con are pretty much what I expect them to be.
Well, the best compliment somebody ever gave me meeting me for the first time at Workbench Conference after like a 4.5 minute conversation was, what you see is what you get with you, huh? And I was like, is that good or bad? And they're like, no, it's great. Like you were exactly how I expected you to be in person. And I love that because I think that's exactly it. Like you just meet people and you're like, okay, regardless of who you are behind the camera, you just get a vibe for like how a person is. And they're like, you are exactly like what I thought you were. And it's such a cool feeling, to be quite honest.
Yeah, the community is amazing. And all the meeting up with people is great. I, I want to iterate what Jeff said about the shy part. So just by nature of the algorithm, if you're asking the question about how to get comfortable in front of the camera, you probably have a smaller account. And that's not a dig. It's just kind of probably a fact. You're probably newer to the whole thing. By nature of algorithm, your stories probably won't get put out in front of a lot of people yet because your account's smaller. So remember, like, the people that will see it are people that are following you for a reason. Like, they're there
absolutely
purely because they are excited for what you're doing, or they just want to support you or whatever. So they're probably like, it's the best people to start making stories for, is mm-hmm. people you're comfortable with, because you won't start seeing hate for a while. It'll be a bit before you start seeing hate. And you will, but by then you'll be totally comfortable with it. It is very weird, like, hitting that flip button on the camera when you're doing a story to go from like pointing at stuff to going to having your face on there. It's a weird transition, but you're probably very likely going to get over it really quickly. And it's cool. Like, for me, I was like, well, before Instagram, I thought social media was super dumb, and I still do, but I thought it was super dumb. And it was just like such a waste of time. Obviously, a lot of those opinions have changed. I still think there's a lot of stupid stuff in social media, but there's a high value in it. Stories for me have become like therapy. It's very cathartic. Actually, as of late, I've been kind of like pulling back how many stories I'm doing just because of the time, but I will literally just do like 20 stories in a day and like talk about everything I'm doing because it's very cathartic for me. And I really enjoy that process. And like Jeff said, usually it like ratchets up my personality, like some of my more outgoing personality characteristics actually get ratcheted up. I've been finding also lately that I'm actually like way more serious than I'd like to be in my stories. And I'm trying to like go back to myself. Yeah, and have more
lighten up.
Yeah, I need to lighten up for reals. Like I watch a story and I'm like, man, that's all business, Mike. That's boring.
No, but the thing I like about your stories, the thing I like about your stories is I feel like I'm in your shop with you throughout the day.
That's the goal. I mean,
yeah, I really do. And you're not doing and this is not a dig. You're not doing anything, I'm doing air quotes, special in the sense of like, you know, you're not like, whoa, look at this like cool, like upside down table I'm hanging from the ceiling. Like, you're just literally bringing us through your day with you.
Yeah, it's a vlog. Like,
it's fun.
A vlog.
I mean, it's fun to watch, you know?
It's a vlog, it's great. Needs to be more fun. Like, it is fun. Like, I like doing it. I look back and I'm like, man, I'm getting way too serious. So now I'm having more fun with it again. And it's fun. It becomes this thing where you get to express yourself. I always say that my Instagram feed is my work, and my stories is Mike. So I live in the stories, and that's kind of where I'm at with it. I've always said that. And that's really like the fun part. Like, I get to just be me, and I'm trying to be more me in there, not so serious. But I want to share everything, but I don't want it to be so serious and like business time, had meetings. That's boring stuff. I want to talk about the cool part of why I got into woodworking, and that's the woodworking. So, but anyway, the point is how to get over it. Honestly, you just need to push the button and flip that camera around and just
do it.
Like, you just need to do it, because you're going to find that as soon as you get comfortable with it, it's going to be pretty enjoyable. Like, sharing, even if not a lot of people are watching, it's still very enjoyable. Like, don't do that for the views. Do it for you as like a cool way to document what you've been doing and to share what's going on. It's just fun. Like, it's just a nice way to share stuff. I don't know. I mean, you see Sam's stories, like, I don't know. There's a 95% chance I'm going to see her dog, and it's going to be laying there, and she's going to be like saying how much she loves her dog. And I'm like, yeah, this made my day better.
No, but like, that's my life. Welcome to my life. Yeah,
like,
but
it's good. Like, I see it and it's like, this is great.
Listen, I always say it, I'll go back to it again. Just share you. There are people out there who want to subscribe to that, who want to subscribe to you, who want to be part of your life, who enjoy watching what you do. You are going to find those genuine people, and then they are going to cheer you on so hard that it's going to be so easy to show up every day for them and with them and like do the thing. And yeah, just try. You know, like, I'm telling you, I think people think I'm kidding. Yeah, just pull the band-aid off, and I'm telling you, the right people are going to show up for you, and it's going to be so rad when it happens.
Mm-hmm. But also, like, right away, now when I post stories, I don't even think about it. It's just, okay, I'm working on this. I'm 3D printing this stupid thing today. But back when we first started, it almost held me accountable for, like, I got to show up for these people today, and just, like, you know, because mm-hmm. they want to know what I'm working on. So it's just, if you're struggling with getting out in the shop and coming up with ideas to, you know, make stuff, or you just want to build stuff, but you don't know where to start or what to cut in your CNC, just go out there and just grab some wood and just make a couple stories and just talk, and you'll figure something out. Just use it to hold yourself accountable and just do it. You will get comfortable.
Yeah, just share. It's going to be good. I mean, don't overshare. Well, I mean, you can if you want to, if that's your brand. If you want to overshare, overshare, whatever. Yeah, oops. Yeah, I mean, if you want to overshare, don't be like, check out how cool my new social security card is. Just be careful. People are crazy. Like, just be like, really careful with crazy people. I mean, overshare for sure. It's fun. Like, share the things you're excited about is really what it's about. Like, you share what you're excited about, someone else is going to be excited about it. Or they're going to be excited to see how excited you are about it. So,
but and if you're ever feeling self-conscious, just go watch me dancing in my YouTube videos while I'm woodworking, because that is a vibe, and you will feel like 10 times better about yourself after you watch that.
Oh, anyone's allowed to dance? No,
not me.
Not with that attitude. No, it's a cool thing to be able to share it. I mean, I don't know.
There's also the accounts that, so I'm not an oversharer. I know Mike, we mainly keep it business. Like, I don't talk about life stuff, but the accounts that do get very personal and share the life stuffs have very dedicated followings. Like all the mommy bloggers that talk about like pregnancy. I don't know why that's the first thing that popped in my head, but like when you go through stuff, someone out there is going to relate with it. And that's how you're going to find your community, by being yourself and sharing as much as you want to share.
Yeah, I very much keep personal stuff out of stories. I really don't share my personal stuff in there. I don't like to. I don't want to. I have no desire to do any of that. I really try to keep it on woodworking and business stuff, because I think people really do want to hear about the business. But that's just my choice. Other people do other things. And it's just like Jeff said. I mean, they do get... I just can't give everything to Instagram. I can't, like, or not just Instagram, but social media. Like, I can't give everything of myself. Like, I need to have the personal stuff for me. Like, my relationships with friends and people and people I'm close to, like, I really don't want to like publicize a lot of that, because honestly, it like takes away from it.
He's like, I don't want to admit that I'm actually friends with Sam on social media and in public.
So. No, not at all. But like the inner workings of my personal anything, I just don't want to give that up to people, because it's just mine. Like, I need some things that are just mine. So like, find the boundaries that's right for you. Yeah. I'm not saying what your boundary needs to be. I'm just telling you, it's just like the shop rate. My boundaries are what works for me. You need to find the boundaries that work for you. And if you want to share it all and you're fine with that, cool. I mean, that's good on you. That freaks me out, but yeah, good on
send
you.
It
yeah, I mean, I just worry, because like I don't have like a massive following, and I've had people show up here like
same they, it's like, really they just weird showed up,
and I, yeah, they're just like, I'm like, what are you doing here? They're like, oh, we found you on Google and we wanted to see your shop. I'm like, that you need to get out of here right now. Like,
don't
you need
do
to
that
go. Like, yeah, don't ever like that kind of stuff. Like, I just like I don't want any part of that, you know. And I'm in boonies, you know. So like, people, it just freaks me out, like having like a really large following and then people like really get weird, really weird. So I don't know, that's just my little caveat to that. But yeah, find what you're happy with, find what you want to share, and go to town with it, because it is really fun. Like, it's really fun to share that with people and have an audience that is excited and invested in what you're doing. It's like a cheering section, and it's not like, and I'm not saying in a belittling way at all. Like, it's really amazing that there's people who will watch what you're doing and get so excited about what you're doing. You're like, man, I don't even deserve this. And that's where imposter syndrome comes from. But you really do like deserve to have a cheering section. It's like really cool. Like, you're like, if you're doing cool stuff, I mean, I know I get invested in what, like Sam, Jeff and Jess, all my friends, all these people who I watch their stuff that they got going on. I get really invested because I care, you know, we all care. It's the human condition. You know, we care about good things happening to people we are invested in. So
I've been so bad at keeping up with everyone's stuff, because like, my life is essentially social media. So to go on social media is just kind of, I'm just so burnt out with it. So like, I don't really hang out on Instagram much anymore. I used to, but now I usually just,
like, it's just like real human communication is where it's at for sure.
Yeah.
Yes. It's exhausting. It's like, that's why I don't want to share too much, because honestly, content kind of takes away joy from it sometimes in a lot of things. Like, as soon as I have to film, as soon as I know that I'm going to be filming something for content, I'm like, man, this isn't going to be nearly as fun. And I'm kind of like, that didn't always used to be like that, which kind of is a bummer. But like now I'm just like, now I'm just like, I got to get this filmed because it's my job. You know, and as soon as something becomes your job, it's just kind of like, man.
Even with like people, like everyone wants to start a business. They all want to have their own thing. But once you start, like if you just love going to your shop and woodworking, like Mike said before that he goes out there, turns the cameras off, cuts some dovetails, does some joinery just to get that, just to enjoy the process of it. But once you start filming everything and trying to sell furniture and all that, it's just such a different atmosphere. Cause there's times where I just want to, like, I'll get a 3D printer or something. I just want to like put it together. I don't have to like think about filming it and shots. I just want to like check out this thing. But I'm kind of put myself in that situation where I need content.
So one thing that I've been doing lately that's been helping a lot with this, because my biggest fear, right, and I'm sure this is a big fear of everyone, you hear everybody be like, don't make your hobby into a career, like you're going to hate it. And I don't believe that. But what I will say is to that sentiment of like kind of knowing you have to record things and then being like, oh man, I don't really want to like do this because I have to turn this into content today. One thing I've been doing is I used to record like every single second of every project that I was doing for YouTube. And then like you only end up using a third of that footage, maybe even like a fifth. So what I do now is if I know I have to make like 50 repeat cuts of something on a saw, I'm not taking footage of me making 50 repeat cuts. I'm taking footage of me making one or two of them from like a couple different angles. And then I'm shutting my camera off and I am getting back into being actually immersed in the woodworking or building aspect where I'm actually enjoying Absolutely. That process for a little bit, because having the camera on you the entire time to record all this stuff that you're not going to use anyway, it kind of does take this extra little bandwidth away from the project. Cause you know, you're like, whether it's there or not, you're like, oh, it's recording. Right. So taking just moments of like, for me being present in my shop again, and not just for purposes of being on camera, has been something that has been so helpful. And I've been finding so much more joy in the process lately doing that.
Yeah. That's 100% right. That's such a good approach. Like you don't need to film everything. It just creates more work
like,
later.
You're not going to edit forever.
Like
my poor editor. Yeah. Like yeah, why'd like you send me 65 hours of footage of
just you laying tile,
5 hours of sanding?
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, if you're doing 50 cuts, you need two or three. So you can do the that's a nice B-roll shot. That's it. That's great. Or just the one shot. It's just, you don't need a whole lot. But I've been making like gifts for people and like little things, you know. I just made like 9 plant stands last night. Like, I don't need 9 plant stands. I'm going to give them to friends. You know what I mean? I made it not for a client and not for content. I literally made it because it's woodworking. I mean, it's almost woodworking. It's plant stands. But it was really like an enjoyable, like quick win, you know? And it's just like things like that are nice. Like they're just so good. Like you just got to do things for yourself. That's why I was saying like, don't give up everything to social media. Don't give them everything. Give them the things that are relevant to what you're doing. That's my approach. Like, I don't give up my personal life on there. I just don't want to. And I don't want to give up all my woodworking to content. I'll give up tips and tricks and stuff like that. But like, some woodworking needs to be for me because it is my passion. Like, I do love woodworking very much and I want to get really good at it. So just know your boundaries.
Again, just do it though, because there's so many channels that pop up that crush it and they'll get like 10,000, 20,000 followers so fast and all of a sudden they just disappear because, again, it's just not for them. So try it. It doesn't pay to stress about it unless you try it and realize you don't like it or you actually like it. Don't force it.
Yeah. Just do it. It's fun. Like it is fun. I mean, sometimes it's not fun for people. I know like we will, I think we've had this conversation before where like you'll see people or accounts pop up in the community and they'll just like, you'll see them like skyrocket. I don't know how many times I've seen it, but like a lot where they'll skyrocket and then something happens and then you just never hear from them again. Like some of these accounts like blow up and then something happens and they just can't hang, you know? Cause I think a lot of it is like social media burns people out on things a lot. Like I think these people are just like, oh, this is just not even worth the work. I don't know. It can happen. Just be careful. Anyway, mic drop. I don't know if that's our show or not. What do you guys want to do? Keep going.
I don't know if that's our show.
Yeah.
Were there any other questions on there that you felt
so many?
Oh, there's
questions.
A lot.
So maybe we can split this into the next episode too. We can roll it on in, and then we can make a prompt that's like, if anybody wants us to cover a certain topic,
I mean, the only problem is I have to go to an install really bad. That's the only problem.
No. I mean, in general, like,
oh, do another episode next week. Yeah.
We'll do this again next week because we have a lot of questions. But like, for anybody listening to this episode that has a question for us, like, drop it to us. Let us know what you want to talk about. This helps us a lot too, because like, we could just sit here and like shoot the breeze together and be stupid for a whole hour. And I'm sure people definitely want to hear that, but we want to put some value in these episodes. So I think that this is like a great place to start if we can start with some questions.
If you have a question that's like for anyone, any one of us, an individual, I mean, we'll get into the machinery and equipment leasing versus buying and then equipment versus employees kind of conversation too, just because that question was asked like 4 times, but I was also asked when I shared the story. So it is very specific to my situation. But the thing is, that doesn't make it not a valid question. So we'll get to those questions, like individualistic, like question towards each of our different accounts. Like, people are going to have specific questions for Jeff and Jess that I won't get or Sam won't get. And people will have questions for Sam that Jeff and Jess won't get and I won't get. So ask those questions, because if you're thinking of that question, someone else probably is too. And it's going to be a value for multiple people, not just for yourself. And if it is just a value for you, then we're happy to answer it too. So give us topics. Like, really, this makes the podcast content pretty easy for us. We don't have to sit here being, you know, rambling bozos. So,
We can be if people
are. I'm okay with it. Anyway,
like, that sounds
we're
great.
We'll happily be rambling bozos.
Bozos all day. It sounds amazing. So anyway, that's the show. Thank you for all the reviews.
Yes,
please keep sharing the show. Like, we really appreciate it. That's the best way to help us. It's the freest way to help us. Like, if you have social media, doesn't matter what size your account is, share it, because the podcast is growing, but it is at a point where it's very likely that someone you share it with hasn't heard of it yet. So if you help share the show, it's really appreciated. So we're really, really stoked on the growth of this thing, and we just want to keep it rolling. And that means we need to grow.
Can't do without you guys, though. So thanks for listening to us banter every week.
Yeah, literally, we need you. So, all right, well, that's going to be the show. We'll be back next week. For show.
Bye.
Bye, friends.
Bye.
This is Selfmade. If you'd like to learn more about the show or its hosts, check the links down below in the bio. And if you think we've earned it, please leave us a 5-star review and share the show with your friends.